Hello and welcome to the Negative Pauses Podcast, episode 335. I'm your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from the Gutterman Cave here in Louisville, Kentucky. It is a solo show, a listener interaction show. So, and man, I got a lot of stuff to get to, so I'm going to dive right into this. A little pre-warning. It's going to be a long episode. I got a lot of stuff on this one, so but let's just dive right in. Let's get the emails. I got an email from Mike Kukovica. And you might remember on the last episode, Andre talked about meeting up with Mr. Mike Kukovica and doing a little photo shoot with him, a little photo walk. And so he sends a lovely little email here. He says, meet up with Andre. And he starts off, Gutermann, pronounced as it should be, Gutermann. Just wanted to write and say that Andre and I met up on Saturday and had a great time walking around Venice and Santa Monica shooting photos. I can see how you have become good friends with him. He's a great guy. He even let me take a shot at making a portrait of him. We were thinking of you, so you were with us in spirit. Well, thank you all. Hopefully you and I, or all three of us, could catch up sometime in the future. Heck, I should drive to Kentucky. It isn't that terribly far away. And John Gregory lives there too. Maybe we could do a little meetup. Hope you're well, my friend. Mike Kukovica. Well, thank you, Mike. Yeah, we should definitely meet up. If there's any chance that you can get here to the bluegrass state of Kentucky, then absolutely. John and I, I'm sure, John from A Light in the Dark podcast, and I would love to meet up with you. And hey, drink some fine local bourbon. Maybe go to a distillery or something here, yeah? And take some cool film photos. But Mike Kukovica is on kukovica.com. It is kukavica.com. You can also find him on Instagram. That is, he's the drunk_darkroom on on Instagram. Still one of my favorite Instagram handles there. But so then he sent me another email. I think I just got this today or yesterday. And he says, hey, Mike, I just wanted to follow up with a photo that Andre let me take last weekend. This was the second one, and it feels genuine. Since you know him better than I, you be the judge. I get the feeling you have seen this look before. Still looking forward to meeting up one way or another. Take care, Mike Kukovica. And yes, there's a lovely lovely portrait of Andre that he has sent in this email. And yeah, Andre kind of has that look. It's a nice natural smile, but possibly also the little look that he gives me with that smile when my humor turns a little grade schoolish, I think. So so yes, I have seen that look. So I think you captured the essence of Andre there, Mike. But hey, hope all is well with you, and certainly hope we can meet up in the future at some point. Mike Kukovica. So all right. Next up, I got some cool stuff in the mail, and I got to get to quite a bit here. First up is from Mr. Pete Donovan. You might remember him. He's been on the show here recently. He's helped us out at times, and he used to be on one of the first hosts of the Grainy Days podcast. So he sends a little letter and a print, and the letter is on a nice little typewritten letter, analog here, folks. And says, "Dear Mike, I hope this letter finds you well. I hope you will be happy to know that this is being typed on a typewriter, LOL. I was able to get a freaking good deal on a Smith Corona typewriter for a really good price. So a majority of letters will now be sent and written on a typewriter and not a faux app. I'm glad that the first set of letters and prints made it to you guys. The print I'm sending you is unfortunately an HP print." Well, there's no need to apologize for that. The HP, HP printers, the Instant Ink program, and it's the hottest trend in home inkjet printing. It's taking over the world by storm, so nothing wrong with that. He says, "I ran out of chemicals, but I promise that on the next round will be a darkroom print. Thank you for being a part of this exchange with me. I love sending out prints. I hope that you're feeling somewhat back to normal in Kentucky. Ha ha. I hope you enjoy the print I sent. Talk with you soon. Stay safe, sane, and keep creating. Cheers." Excuse me, Pete Donovan. And Pete sends a nice little print here of it's like, you know, black and white print with power lines with tons of pairs of shoes thrown over the power lines. Something you see quite a bit in cities. I used to see this a whole lot more when I was a kid. I don't see as much anymore. I don't think the kids are as much of hooligans as they were when I was a kid. But he's managed to capture the classic power line with tons of shoes thrown over pairs of tennis shoes thrown over the power lines. And I've always wanted to get that shot like that. I haven't come across a scene like that yet. But Mr. Pete Donovan is running on Facebook. Excuse me. He has a Facebook group. The Film and Letter Pen Pal Exchange Facebook group. Film and Letter Pen Pal Exchange group. So if you want to send prints, send letters to other people in the community, join that Facebook group and get involved with that. It's a cool way to share prints and get to know people. So thanks to Pete for starting that. And thanks to Pete for this print. And hey, Pete, don't thank me yet because I've yet to send you anything. So I did sign up on that Facebook group, but I've yet to send a print out. So I owe you some prints, brother, and I'll try to get that out sometime in the near future. So, okay, next up. I got what we got here. I got a zine just I guess it was like yesterday. I think it was from Tony Skokovic, and Tony has sent me a lot of cool stuff. And this is a cool little zine called hopefully I get this pronounced right, Baloptikon 25, and it's called Expired. And there's a little note in here. It says, "Dear Mike, Baloptikon started as an EPUB for me to share my photographic ramblings with friends and family. Now in printed form, sharing this with you just 'cause. Thanks for all the effort in putting out the podcast. Best, Tony." So thank you so much, Tony. This is an awesome little zine. It looks like an all expired film. It says, Baloptikon is a projector that utilizes reflected light for projecting the images of opaque objects, from the Merriam-Webster dictionary there. But this issue 25 is expired. It says, looking at the strip of businesses along Dundas Street just as it enters Mississauga, one can't shake the feeling of looking at the passing world, 21st century urbanization and densification is slowly marching along the old Highway 5 and is transforming this 20th century suburbanscape block by block. Family restaurants and donut shops, car repair shops with ample parking, all in the way of the changing tide. Symbolic then to capture this slowly disappearing scene on an expired roll of Konica film from the 1980s when this strip of Dundas West was at its zenith. Hard not to feel a tinge of nostalgia for this world, perhaps a simpler time living at a slower pace along the sleepy Highway 5. There's a lot of good, it's a good looking small town suburbanite sort of images. A lot of family businesses and restaurants, and there's a donut shop, some sub shops, some newspaper stands here, and really, really cool. It reminds me of a lot of the things I see in my area that I hadn't really thought to capture, and would be a good idea to capture, because man, things do seem to change in our areas a whole lot quicker than we actually realize, I think. So what a cool ideal for a zine. You can see you can get a copy of this, or just see Tony's work on Junction Rails Photography, which is www.junctionrails.ca. There'll be a link in the show notes. And thank you so much, Tony, for sending me yet another really, really cool thing here. You've sent me so much cool stuff. He's also on Instagram at Junction Rails as well. And check him out. Get you a copy of this. Really, really cool. Baloptikon 25 expired. Do you have 25 issues out, things of this? That's very cool if you do. I would assume it's called Baloptikon 25, so there you go. Very cool. Thank you, Tony. All right, next up is, let's see here. I have a zine from David Lane, and I did a face cast on this, a week or so ago. And the zine came all the way from Ireland, and sometime in its travel across the pond, it must have hit a hurricane or some really heavy rains. The package had gotten quite wet, and he sent me a print as well. And the print was kind of stuck to the cover of the zine, and some of the zine pages were kind of trying to stick together, but I managed to salvage it, and so I could take a look at this beautiful zine. It's got a really good mix of black and white images and some what are they called? Lumen prints mixed in this mix. And, you know, I got to admit, well, let's see. I guess I could read this. Well, actually, I don't have to read this because David Lane has sent me a call-in all about this scene. And I think he can explain it better than I do. And after I listened to his call-in and really got an idea of what the concept of the scene was, it really actually elevated it a whole lot more. It's a great scene anyway, but the idea behind it, the thought process behind it was really, really pretty clever and pretty cool. And he also sent me a beautiful print here too. On the back it says, hi, Mike. Thanks for offering to mention my zine on the podcast. This is my first attempt at a zine. I'm including this print as a note, really. Regards, David Lane. And David Lane is on, you can see him on his website, www.memorylane.ie. And on Instagram, he is LookCSnapShare. LookCSnapShare. And that is David Lane. So let's listen to his call-in, though, first about this is his first zine, and I think it's just a great idea, a great concept that he had for this. So let's check that out.
Hi, Mike. This is David Lane. I'm doing a quick call-in, hopefully quick, but it'll probably ramble on for a few minutes. You invited me to do a call-in about my zine. Firstly, before I forget, thanks a million for the podcast. I tune in every week, following it since near the start, and I think I've listened to every episode. I love the more recent format with the less podcasts each week, I suppose, you know, quality over quantity. But anyway, between yourself, Roxana, and Andre, you do a great job. You really keep the community going together, and I suppose, look, this is another example of it. You don't know me from Adam, but you showed my zine and you encouraged me to send this call-in review. So look, whether it's to give you less to do, that I'm going to do the review of my zine, which is great. So look, really, I can't review my own work, but the zine is, it's about 24 pages, 30 odd photographs. They're all taken on a Pentax 35mm camera. All the photographs in the zine are the full aspect ratio. You can see the little borders there. Look, not that I'm against cropping my images, but I had very little to do during lockdown, only take a few photographs. I'm a professional photographer. I work in a print shop as well. And during lockdown, or initial lockdown, there was no photography to be done. There was no printing to be done. It was all, you know, as they say in the tin, lockdown. So look, I'm going to read the first paragraph of the inside cover of my zine, and it says, lockdown. Stay at home, wash your hands, observe social distancing. Our government was trying to get us to understand what was going on, and they were giving us little hints and tips. March 2020, the Irish government enacted new legislation to protect Irish citizens from the spread of COVID-19. Schools and creches were the first to close, then non-essential retail outlets and services. We were finally advised that we could only leave our homes if we were employed in key services or to purchase necessary supplies such as food and medicine. Our Taoiseach, which is like Prime Minister or Leader, Leo Varadkar, did however include exercise outdoors. So we were permitted to walk, run or cycle within 2 kilometres of our homes. And I suppose, look, Ian Nutt, as I know him, he lives local enough to me here in Ireland. And yeah, it is a small country and we do kind of know everybody here. but look, it was actually through negative positives that I met Ian. And yeah, we have a kind of a beer and cameras thing going here at the moment, or we started before lockdown, and at the minute it's no beer and cameras because all our pubs are closed. So the zine was just, you know, Ian had a brilliant idea of, look, we're locked down, but that shouldn't stop our photography. Get out, explore your area, and I suppose using the imaginary 2 kilometer radius, like the Irish are fairly easy going, so there was no roadblocks, there was no guards, maybe heading in and out of the cities. But as you're coming into a city or a town, you're asked by the guard where you're going. You could say you were going shopping, you were going to work. That was kind of it. They just waved you on. They weren't really taking names or ID. But look, most people did what they had to do. They stayed at home. They lost their work. The government gave some good support packages for people who were out of work, like myself. Couldn't do any photography, so we got pandemic, I don't know what to call it, pandemic payment, like a social welfare. So look, we weren't out driving, weren't spending petrol, we weren't going to be going on holidays. So look, kept the wolf from the door, and that's it. So I went out around 2 kilometers, I think 10 roads from my house, and basically that's what you see in the zine, me stopping at the end of the 2 kilometers, looking off into the distance, as far as I suppose I can see. And you'll notice most of the roads out by where I live are little bendy boreens, we'd call them, which a boreen is, bore is Irish for road, and boreen would be a small road. And that's it. Little roads, room for one car. So if you get the zine, that's what you're looking at. What I also did was, the first time out, I felt like I was on a little expedition. So I picked up a dandelion leaf and a dandelion flower, and I brought it home and I made a lumen print. So over the next few days, I brought home little plants, little flowers, weeds, a piece of baling twine I found tied to a gate, and a latex glove. So even though it's quite rural and we're wondering how people are getting germs, and next you find a latex glove in the ditch on the side of a road. What I did notice, look, just evaluating my own work, I did start to find, I was looking at the roads and seeing they were going on, and it felt the road is going on, but I couldn't go on. I had to observe my 2 kilometers, but I also came across barriers and gates, and I felt that's what I was drawn to photograph. I suppose it showed how I felt we were being kept in, or we were being protected. Depends on how you'd look at it. On my lumen prints, you can see at the back cover of the zine, it was kind of a purpley pink color. But what I did was, that's on inversion, they're kind of greeny, blue, black. But on inversion, they're purple and pink. But what I did for the zine was, I converted them to black and white, because when they were purple and bright on the page, I felt they were drawn, taking too much attention from the black and white images. But I did have to throw a couple in at the back of the end of the zine. And lastly, the little snail. Real little snail that I came across, cycled past him. I must have went, I suppose, a couple of 100 meters. I decided to go back and photograph the snail, because I was just starting, just look, it's a strange world. And there I was, cycling down the road, thinking about a snail. And what I was thinking about was, there he is. No matter where he goes, he's always going to be within 2 kilometers from home, carrying his little house on his back. And that's what we want. We want to be at home. We want to be protected, and we want to be safe. So that's the end of the zine. Unfortunately, here now, October 18th, 2020, the Irish government have us gone into phase 3 of their new 5-step lockdown. And it looks like some of our counties are in phase 4, which is even more serious than what we are here. But it looks like from tomorrow on, maybe the next couple of weeks, they're talking about 6 weeks of phase 5, which is back to the full lockdown, and I might be out again. So even though I thought it might be getting towards the end of being over, it looks like I'll be still searching for the end, you know, be back in December, January. We could be looking at a new zine, so I'll have to flog these ones. I have about 50 of them, and look, Mike was great to promote it and recommend it. If anybody's looking for one, pop on to memorylane.ie or find me on Instagram. Look, see, snap, share, and I can sort you out. It's more or less covering cost price, and I have a little added cost now of airproof, waterproof, dustproof, COVID-proof packaging to make sure the next zine I send out gets there in one piece, nice and dry, and not stuck together like Mike's one. That's it. I'll talk to you all soon. Take care.
Well, thank you so much, David Lane, for the call in about the zine, this beautiful zine. What a cool concept, like taking this 2 kilometer sort of imposed restrictions from the government during the COVID lockdown, and taking a shot. kind of what's beyond that restriction, and then grabbing some sort of plant or whatever in that same area and making a lumen print from it. Just what a great concept. I got to give you props for that. And knowing that the zine was not knowing all those facts, the zine was a great zine, but knowing that just makes it just a whole lot more poignant, to be honest with you. And definitely check it out. And I'll have the ways to get a hold of him in the show notes here. So again, thanks to David Lane for that. Beautiful job. Great concept. And hey, you shot it with a Pentax, right? Working man's camera. So somewhat a working man's zine, I guess you could say. So all right. One last thing I got in the mail here. This little envelope came in, and it was addressed to Sir Michael Gutterman, and I don't think I've been knighted yet, but I appreciate the sentiment. And this is from Mario Piper. Now, Mario has a podcast as well. It is the Gen X Photography Podcast, Gen-X Photography Podcast, and I kind of called him out. I was like, hey, because he'd kind of been dormant for a bit, a month or so, and he just recently popped out a new episode. So glad to see that Mario is coming back with the podcasting game, with the Gen-X Photography Podcast. So this little envelope arrives, and inside is like a receipt. And it's from Mario Piper, and on the receipt, it's actually signed Monsignor Michael Gutterman. So I'm getting all sorts of titles here that I didn't know I had. But in the item description, it says quantity one, description, role of the hottest trend in film photography, amount zero. Have fun, sir. Total cost $0. So in this little package is that's a beautiful sound, right? A roll of Kodak Advantix 200 25 exposure APS film, advanced photo system film, with a little sticker on it that says 25. And I can only think that wasn't 25 cents. It had to be $25, right? Because we all know that APS is the hottest trend in film photography. It's taken over the world by storm. And and this roll expired in 2001. So it's quite expired color film from Kodak Advantix. So I'll be glad, happy to shoot that. Thank you so much, Mario, for sending that to me. And I can't believe you. I mean, $25, that's a lot for a roll of film, right? But I mean, you know, that's what it takes to be a cool kid these days, I guess. So I'm sure that wasn't 25 cents. I'm sure of it. But definitely check out Mario's podcast, the Gen X Photography Podcast. And thank you so much, Mario, for the roll of the hottest trend in film photography. Okay. Well, speaking of Mario Piper, this is a segue, folks. This is 335 episodes. I'm starting to get way more professional. I don't know if you've noticed this. I mean, I just the professionalism is just really just up a notch. And this just makes a brilliant segue, because we have a call-in camera review from Mario Piper. And he's going to be talking about the Konica 3A. So let's check out this call-in camera review for this week from Mario Piper, Gen X Photography Podcast, about the Konica 3A.
Hello, Negative Positives people, and Mr. Gutterman, Mr. Dominguez, and Miss Roxana Engels. I wanted to give a call-in review of a camera that I think is a lovely camera. In fact, I think of it as a gem, actually. I'm sitting here drinking an absinthe, enjoying every bit of it, and looking at this lovely camera. It's a Konica 3A. Konica 3A, and it was made back in the late 50s. I ordered my camera from eBay, of course, where we get a lot of our cameras. And when it came to me, I was, you know, I saw the images on eBay, but then I received it and was just blown away at the heft of this camera. And it's really not a big camera at all. I believe it's about 5 1/4 inches wide, so it's not very wide at all. A little bit tall, about 3 1/4 inches tall. In a way, it kind of makes me think of the Fujifilm X100, which I used to have. Kind of the same idea, although this is a true rangefinder camera, and that was just a viewfinder camera. But this camera has no electronics in it that I'm aware of. There's not a light meter at all. It is a rangefinder, and the viewfinder in it is so beautiful. It's a 1:1 ratio viewfinder. So as you look through it, and this is, it's quite astounding, as you look through it with your left eye and open your right eye, it's as if what passes from your right eye to your left eye goes through the camera and there's no change. It's a marvel to behold, to look through. The viewfinder patch is sort of a yellowish patch, like a lot of them. And it's quite easy to focus with the focusing mechanism. It's got an interesting feature, and that is the shutter advance lever. Instead of the lever being on the back where you'd advance it with your right thumb, it's actually on the front, right beside the lens, and you advance it with your left thumb by pressing it down. But instead of pressing it down once, it's a double stroke lever. So you take your shot and then you advance it once, or you press it down once and then press it down again, and that advances the film. In this case, it's a 35 millimeter camera. Anyways, advances the film one exposure. So it's an interesting setup. I don't see any particular advantages or disadvantages to it, although I did read that it could be an advantage to left-handed photographers, but I'm right-handed, so it doesn't bother me in any way, or it doesn't add anything or subtract anything. It's just interesting. Let's see, things about this camera. It's got an f2 at its brightest, of course, down to f22, but an f2 lens, 6 element. I don't really know what it means to have 6, 7, 9, whatever elements, or what kind of a lens it is, as far as Takumar or Elmar, whatever, Summicron or Sumar. I'm not up on what those mean. All I know is it's a beautiful lens. It's an f2 lens, which is pretty bright, and that means for somebody who, like me, who loves to shoot really slow film, you know, down to ISO 12 or 6 or 3 or 1.6, the Kodak 2254, or even I've taken red scale film, I've taken 2254 film Kodak, which is natively 1.6 ISO, red scaled it myself, and then used it, shot it at 0.3 ISO, and I've done so with this camera. And it's nice because at such low shutter speeds, or such low ISOs, I should say, the fact that this is a rangefinder with a leaf shutter means that there's very, very little camera shake. The majority of the shake that's in the photograph is your own body, your own hands. This is a really nice camera to use in that respect because it's got that beautiful leaf shutter. The design of it is just spectacular. It's, like I said, a gem to behold. And if you get a chance to look one up on the internet, it's just so beautiful. Well-crafted, all metal, heavy as, I mean, I have a Minolta SRT, 102, which again is itself is a lovely camera, and I use it quite often. With that, you know, being an SLR, much larger camera, with a lens, is about the same weight as this little tiny Konica 3A. Same weight, same heft. And I think it's because of just how well it was made. I believe that it is a brass body. Another peculiarity about this camera is to open the back. When you want to change film, what you have to do is there's this little pop-up lever, a D-shaped lever that has it's in a little groove indentation in the camera, I should say, in the bottom of the camera. And when it's closed, you flip it down to the C, and then you flip that D lever up, rotate it half a turn to O, press it down, and it cocks the back open, as you just heard. And that's one thing that you have to be aware of if you happen to buy this camera. I have left it on accident in the O position, set it down, and oops, I've opened the back just by setting it down, and thus, giving light leaks to my camera or to my photos. So you got to make sure when you've loaded the film that you flip it all the way back to the closed position. And that way you don't expose your photos in a way that you don't want to. But anyways, all in all, it's just a lovely camera. And they go for, lower, in the 90s, maybe 80s, if they're not in the greatest condition, on up into, the lower 300s, within that range. I think I got mine for 180 something on eBay. And I don't shoot it as much as I do my SLR, because I'm kind of an SLR guy, but I do enjoy shooting, or do put a roll in every now and again in this camera. And the main reason is it's just such a beautiful camera to hold and to look at, in addition to taking photos with. And every time I take photos with it, like I just shot a roll of Ektar through it, and the images came out beautiful, very beautiful. And I'm getting ready to put a roll of Lomachrome Metropolis through and see how that goes. But anyways, just wanted to give a little review to this wonderful camera while drinking my absinthe, and to say that you guys are awesome, and sayonara. Hope all's well with you guys. See y'all later.
Well, thank you so much, Mario Piper, for your review of the Konica 3A from also Mario from the Gen X Photography Podcast. Generation X. I like my generation, right? I saw this skit on Saturday Night Live once. It was like a game show, and it was pitting like millennials against boomers. And the host of the game show, the fake game show, was a Gen X guy, and he said he was just kind of enjoy watching the millennials and boomers argue, and he was like, I'm Generation X. We're just gonna sit back and watch the world burn, which I kind of getting a kick out of. But all right, folks, if you want to send any sort of call in camera review, or call-in film review, developing tips, tricks, any mistakes you've made, and anywhere in your film photography journey, it's the easiest way to get on the show. It's super simple. I play every single one of these that I get. So you can just record some audio. The easiest way is on your phone, using your voice recording app on your phone, and then send that file to negpositives@gmail.com, and I'll put it in the queue to get on the air. And it's the easiest way to get on this podcast. And again, I've played every single one of them I've ever received. I just got a batch of like two or three from Mr. Malcolm Myers of some camera reviews. So, just get anything you want to talk about, anything in your film journey. Hey, you got a zine out? Talk about your process about that, or whatever you want to promote. I'm all here. I'm all about like promoting anyone in this community that's got something cool going on. So get those into me if you got something out there. So okay, all right. I'm gonna go ahead and take a break. After this break, we're gonna have an interview that Mr. Andre Dominguez conducted with Mr. Brian Caparici and Chris Visser. And it's going to be probably a lot of large, man, my words are weird tonight. Large format talk. There's been a lot of large format talk here on this podcast recently. I'm going to have to get this. I'm going to do something about this because I don't shoot large format. So, but I'm going to have to get this ship righted. But they're going to have a conversation that Andre conducted. This conversation was about an hour and a half, almost an hour and a half long. And in the interest of time, because I've had so much listener interaction to get to, I think I'm going to cut that in about half and have a part one. And then the next solo show, I'll do part two. So I think we're going to split this into two halves, just in the interest of time. So, we're going to take a break. After that, you'll hear that interview. So we'll be right back, folks.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Negative Positives Podcast. My name is Andre Dominguez. It's going to be a hopefully, you know, medium length conversation with Mr. Brian Caparicci and Chris Visser here, who I will introduce in a second. I've been really interested in getting these two guys on for a while now, because the level of gas between three of us in recent months has just been out the window. So I really want to kind of break down the whys of all these purchases and go over with these two guests that we have had on before, just some insight into what it is that we're working on, how our own styles and types of photography have been evolving lately, and to what degree new gear can actually inspire you instead of just, you know, being additional pieces of an entire camera hoard. So let's go ahead and say hello to our guests. First up, we have coming out of Los Feliz, depending on how you want to pronounce it, California, Mr. Chris Visser. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm good. It's 6:30 in the morning, way earlier than I normally wake up, so I'm feeling great.
we have Brian to thank for that. You know, out of a common sense of courtesy, I offered, oh, we can do in the morning, too, if that's convenient for you guys. Not thinking that anybody would actually take me up on the 6:30 offer. So, and also we have got out of the, is it the Greater Toronto Area, Brian?
Close enough. Niagara region. I'm about an hour from Toronto.
Gotcha. And how are you doing today, Brian?
I got a cup of coffee, so I got no complaints over here on this on this side of things over here. I'm 3 hours ahead of you guys, though. So I'm 3 hours ahead of you guys. So I've got some time on the day already ahead of you guys. Plus, I have three kids, so for me, waking up early is just another day.
There you go. Well, so yeah, as I alluded to before, I think before we actually hit the recording, I think the three of us could be classified as probably in decreasing scale, starting with Brian, as, you know, pretty gassy SOBs. And I want to start first with Brian, because when we had him on the podcast, he was just getting into film. You'd started a few of those episodes of your own podcast about kind of documenting your analog journey, and you've really become, in a variety of the Facebook groups of different kind of little pockets of the analog photography community, one of the top contributors, I think, in the large format photography podcast. Andrew and Simon actually, you know, ran the little report that they give you, and you were the most frequent poster in that group in relatively, you know, short order, since it's only been like a couple of months.
I think Brian's the most frequent poster in every group he's in.
Morning reps, dude. Morning reps. Gotta do it.
So tell me a little bit, Brian, about you've been shooting 35 and you know, half frame medium format for a little while, but you just recently made the jump into large format. What kind of made you want to dip your toes into that? Because I think it's safe to say now that you're all in.
Yeah. Being the top contributor just means I've spent the most money on film and I'm experimenting the most. I've been now shooting. Well, I've been shooting digitally for 15 years, but I've been shooting on film for almost two. And for the better part of those 2 years, like you said, you know, I was shooting 35mm and 120, almost actually only 6x6 on the 120 side. I've got I had a Bronica SQAI. I have a Hasselblad 500cm, and then got my Rolleiflex. And I've always honestly been intrigued by large format. It's always been something that I knew nothing about. Like I knew nothing. I remember a few months ago when I started to when it piqued my interest a little bit more, I was messaging James from CCR. And I was trying to understand. I was like, I didn't know anything. I was like, wait a minute. So you have a lens, and then like, where does the shutter go? And he's like, well, you've got like the lens, it's got like the Copal, and it could be Copal 0 or 1. And I'm like, So then, like, the lens board goes on top of, like, I didn't know, like, I didn't understand it at all. I was, like, super confused. And he was super gracious with his time and sort of helping me through it. And, yeah, so, I mean, this opportunity came up in the NPP group, actually. We'll talk more about that, I'm sure, Andre. It was a good opportunity, a good sort of entrance into the large format world. It was a, you know, a great camera. I was a Bush Pressman, some nice lenses with it. And basically, it had the entire kit that I would need in order to, like, try it. And it was priced very reasonably. And so I said, well, if there's ever been a time to try it, let's go ahead and do it. Now is the time. And so, yeah, I mean, I got it. And, well, the rest, as they say, is history.
Now he's Andre burned, now like, has 100 that camera. Sheets.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I remember seeing that. That post and being like, man, like that looks really interesting. It kind of looks like a Crown Graphic, but I want to do a little bit more research. It is very reasonably priced, but you know, I don't know enough about it to just go, you know, buy now. That was sold by Stephen Tontic, right?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, and so I started doing a little bit of research, kind of comparing the differences between something like a Crown Graphic and the Bush Pressman, and everything that I kept reading just was checking my boxes. It was, you know, small and relatively lightweight, aluminum construction rather than timber for the Crown Graphic, rotating back at the expense of a rotating spring back at the expense of not having a graph lock back, you know, top mounted combined viewfinder rangefinder, which I'm used to from shooting you know, Leicas. And the more and more I kept you know, reading about it, the more I was like, you know what? I think that this might be a good thing to jump on. At the very least, if I end up hating it as much as I hated large format in college, then I can just sell it and make my money back, if not make a little bit more on it. And by the time that I reached out back to Steven and said, hey, I think I'll take it, he was like, oh, someone's already bought it. And I was just like,
he's like, okay. Brian's already had it for 3 weeks at this point, so.
Well, no, it wasn't even that. It was literally like Brian just you know, purchased it. And so in my mind, I was like, motherfucker.
I remember you messaged me, Andre. You're like, damn you. You got it. If you ever want to switch out of it, I got first dibs on it. And I kind of kept that in the back of my mind.
I asked if I could have first dibs on it.
Yeah.
I don't ask. When I talk to Brian, I'm like, I get first dibs if on anything we talk about.
I have Chris's name on like 7 cameras at this point that if I ever decide to get rid of them, they're his.
Visser, what about you? So I know that this is kind of this, you know, devilish level of influence circle that we have here between the three of us, and that, you know, it really doesn't take much time before our collections start looking pretty similar to one another.
Yeah. Well, like, so I had been wanting to get into 4x5 for like, I don't know, a couple of years now, and it's like every couple of months I would go like on a deep like YouTube rabbit hole, watch like, you know, every FPP 4x5 video they've done. And now like that Matt Mirage is doing the large format live, there's so much good large format content of high production quality on YouTube, but there's a lot of other stuff as available as well. And I would, you know, I pretty much decided like I was going to get like a Speed Graphic or a Crown Graphic. And then back in February, Dan Crossley was selling a Crown Graphic. He had picked up like a Super Graphic and a Crown Graphic in a deal and tested them both, but was going to keep the Super Graphic. I think it's a Super Graphic because it's the one that has like the focal plane shutter. So like you can use an Aero Ektar and all that good stuff. So he was going to keep that, but he was going to sell the Crown. And so I bought it from him for a good price. And that was back in February. And I honestly didn't shoot it much. Like I shot like maybe like 8 sheets over the course of like, I don't know, the first like month or so I had it, which now that I'm saying it, it actually sounds more than I remember, but I, you know, only 5 of them turned out. Cause like on my first like outing, 3 of the 4 sheets didn't turn out. So that was fun. But then in quarantine, I've been doing like some studio portrait sessions with my wife. And that's been a lot of fun for me, not always so much for her, just because of the
captions that Vince puts on his video. I think the most recent one where Lauren looks, quite annoyed. I think you captioned it as "I married a photographer."
Yeah. I think we had set everything up, and then something shifted or something, and I was like, oh shit, we have to start over. And so that everything kind of broke down, led to a little bit of an argument. And then so when we started back up, after checking in with each other, that we were both like, are we both still into doing this? Like, cause no one's gonna, I don't want to force anything if we're not. She's like, we went forward and got the expression I got, which I actually really love. And it's like, it's definitely annoyed, but there's still there's a character to it, and then that I'm really happy with. And now we both look at it and laugh. So,
and I mean, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I've seen of your work, in the number of years that you've been with your now wife, there's probably a fair amount of pictures of her looking slightly pissed off, to the point where, it's a part of your portfolio and it has become endearing.
For sure. Yeah. I think, sometimes with loved ones or close friends, we're not as understanding in a portrait session that we might be with someone who is, a model or a friend we don't shoot with often. Or maybe that's just me, that I'm the asshole with with my wife being just do this, and but it's also it's secondhand, or second nature at this point, that relationship. So I think that leads to some interesting results, which I'm happy with. But anyway, so I got the 4x5 back in February, and I've been shooting more. I've only shot and HP5 at this point. I'm almost done with my first box of sheets, so I'm Brian has way surpassed me in number of sheets exposed at this point. Doing his morning reps, pumping up, every morning. But we were talking about gas. I kind of been thinking about getting a Chamonix, specifically the 4.5 F2, but I was like, I'm going to wait until next year. I don't need it right now. I'm going to put in the time with the Crown Graphic, which I love the lens that I have. It's the 127 millimeter Kodak Ektar F4.7. It's got a great, it's very sharp, but also has a lot of character. So I've been really happy with that lens. It's just, with the Crown Graphic, to shoot in portrait orientation, you got to mount it on the side. So then the whole camera is rotated and, there's no movements, which everything I was fine with. And then Brian starts, doing these artistic, super movement heavy, portrait shots. I'm like, damn it. Oh man. And then, what's very funny is Brian gets this Rolleiflex 2.8C and spams the world about it. And I'm like, I've always wanted a Rolleiflex. Maybe I should get it. And then, Jason Hunter from Restore from Backup also gets a 2.8C. Like, damn it. I really want a Rolleiflex. So then I get a 2.8C. But I also I also want a 4x5, and Brian and I have been talking. So when I had been doing some portraits portrait stuff, and I was sending it to Brian, and then I was like, you need to get into 4x5, and I created a monster basically.
Yeah, totally.
Yes, you have.
And so, and then he got the Bush Pressman, and then he very quickly upgraded to the Shenhao. And, then he sent me a link to a Shenhao that was available. And I was like, I don't know. And then it went to someone else. And then I got my Rolleiflex 2.8C in. And there's some issues with it. It's great. I've shot a couple of rolls with it. But, some of the things are, the lower shutter speeds aren't accurate. And the screen is really dim. So I reached out to the seller to be like, hey, I'm willing to keep the camera, but I'd like a partial refund, because I paid a number I wouldn't feel comfortable sharing for it. And I was like, if I'm paying this much, I want it to be better than the way I received it. And they're like, no, just return the whole thing. I was like, all right, which is a bummer.
You paid a fair price for it, Chris. Like, it wasn't like it should have been in tip top shape for the price.
Yeah,
you paid
like
for,
with,
for sure.
With shipping and taxes, like, you know, it's not a small amount of money. And it's cosmetically very nice, but like, just like, it should have been perfect. And the fact that they were like, no, we, you know, just send it back was frustrating. But with that savings, yesterday, I actually bought the Shenhao that Brian told me about originally, because from a Negative Positives community member, Daniel Duarte. Is that how that saying it right?
I think so,
Mr. So I bought that Shenhao. I bought that Shenhao HZX 452A, I think it is.
Yep.
The Shenhao names are complicated. But yeah, so that should be here Saturday. It's coming with a 210 Schneider Seimar f5.6 and lens board, a couple lens boards, etc. But it looks like it's in really good condition. I think Daniel said, you know, he just doesn't shoot 4x5 enough to justify keeping it. So he was passing, you know, he was passing it on to an expert. So the camera that Brian told me to get, I ended up actually getting. So
now, Chris,
but I'm just like copying whatever camera Brian gets next.
Well, I mean, I totally get it. You know, it's when you start seeing, and with the amount of them, because it's not just, you know, quantity, it is quality also, of amazing images that Brian is pumping out with 4x5 as a, I think it's safe to say, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, as a 4x5 beginner, like,
100%
make you think, and especially now that you're starting to incorporate more movements into your work for creative
starting
perspective.
To the first day he had it, he was like shifting the whole thing.
He's, but now
there
he's
was actually, like a little thin part of focus, and everything else was like swing blur.
Well, now he's using,
because I was like, oh, look what I can do.
Now that he knows what he can do, he knows how to use it appropriately, I will say. But yeah, with so many like amazing images basically on the daily coming out of Brian on 4x5, probably influencing a lot more people than you and I, Chris.
For sure.
But yeah, it's
Brian, well, I know that Junior Wyatt just picked up a 4x5. His is on his way as well. So it's just cool to see like a lot of folks in the NPP community are kind of jumping on that ship just because it's obviously, I think a lot of folks are like me though, right? Like, I mean, you think about it, like we're all shooting film. We know what large format is. We know what 4x5 is. But if anyone's like me, it's just one of those things that you're like, oh yeah, it's one of those big camera things and it makes big negatives. But until you start like diving into it and seeing it and kind of like living in that world a little bit more, even like you said, Chris, like the YouTube sort of train that we all find ourselves on, like it is pretty intriguing. And it's almost just like it needs to take up some space in our consciousness. And I think that a lot of folks, there's a very natural appeal to it once it does start taking that space in our consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's nothing like taking a 4x5 negative out of the tank for the first time. Like, I mean, the first time I did it,
Let me correct you on that, Chris. There's nothing like taking a 4x5 slide negative, or I guess slide positive, out of the tank, because that is something. That is something else. Like, oh my goodness,
Brian. That is. Remind me, what chemistry are you using?
Oh, so Andre, there's this little company down. No, so it's funny. I got actually, Andre, you'll be happy to hear this. You want to talk about gas? Is there? I think there's also a thing called CAS, which is, you know, the chemical version of gas. So I just got in like literally 2 days ago. Enough CS6 kits to develop 32 rolls of film.
There you go.
Because I'm absolutely hooked. Like the Cinestill CS6 kit with the D9 first developer is like, and again, like I don't have any experience in shooting slide film, so this was my first time ever shooting slide, and I freaking shot it in 4x5. It was just like, it's completely mind blowing, and the way that the D9 first developer just warms it up, and just it's you take it out and you're just like, you, it's absolutely stunning. It's just absolutely breaththaking. It's the
and you
the
were shooting Probia, right, Brian?
I did Ektachrome in 120 and 35. And then, yeah, in the 4x5, it was the Provia because I got it when I bought my Shenhao. The guy gave me a few boxes of it.
And Provia is definitely like a cooler film. So like that probably did some really good things in the, with that warming up. Because a lot of people shoot Provia with like a warming filter to begin with. So maybe you wouldn't have to if you're developing with the D9.
With anything like in general, like I've fallen in love with the D9 myself, and it's been really, really fun actually providing support for it since it launched. But the thing that I love about the D9 is that for, especially for larger formats, so medium format and large format especially, because you're typically not going to be projecting those, you're going to be either, you know, viewing it on a light table or scanning it. The fact that the D9 one-to-one dilution warms it up a bit kind of neutralizes a little bit of that coolish tone that some people like. And depending on what your subject is, you may actually really like that cool tone, in which case you can use the 1-to-2 dilution. But in most of my applications, I do tend to like a little bit of a warmer slide. So the complaints that a lot of people have had in the past about the new Ektachrome E100D and, you know, Provia in some cases can be, you know, not rectified, because it's not like one's right or one's wrong, but that's the whole purpose of this new family of chemistry with the CS6 chemicals, is that depending on what it is that you're shooting, you can pick your first developer to get the look that you want, which is also why I'm so excited about large format, because I've begun in the last like year and a half to do a bunch more testing. And having to shoot, even if I'm cutting down 35 millimeter rolls into smaller lengths and spooling them back up, doing side-by-side tests is so much easier when you're just dealing with one sheet of film at a time. As long as you've got your film holders labeled, I can shoot, you know, a scene and develop, you know, one sheet in D9, one sheet in D6, do another couple with like bracketed exposures. And yeah, that's expensive, but for testing purposes, like, much better to do that than to have to fire through an entire, like, you know, roll or do two separate backs of a Hasselblad, for example.
Sure. That makes sense. Andre, I had a question for you, because when we first started becoming friends, I remember like you talking about, we were talking about 4x5, and you're like, yeah, I just never see myself shooting 4x5. Like, I feel like I'll be 90% of the way there if I have like a Marmia RB67, RZ67, you know. What made you change your mind? Is it just Brian giving you gas? Or
so, you know, I won't say that Brian was not an influencing factor. But I think that it part of it was that I had certain specific goals when it came to 4x5, even to this day. I know that I'm eventually going to start doing some, you know, going out and about and doing portraits and landscape and architecture stuff and incorporating movements into all that. But even when I do end up experimenting with that stuff, I know that it's not going to be the vast majority of my 4x5 work. The reason why I was interested in a press camera to begin with was because I, you know, was feeling these pangs of longing and nostalgia for just going out on the street and taking street portraits with my Rolleiflex. As a lot of us know, that Hasselblads, Leicas, there are certain cameras that attract people's attention, you know, break down barriers to, you know, portrait photography.
Disarm people.
Yeah, that disarm people. And the idea of walking down like Hollywood Boulevard with a 4x5 press camera and asking people for their portraits seemed like such a kind of charming idea. And then when I kind of, you know, grabbed an old 4x5 negative from one of my negative sleeves here and threw it on a piece of 4x6 paper and saw that, you know, if I'm taking it in portrait orientation, and just kind of laying it down there, it's sized almost perfectly for a wonderful little contact print that's got a little bit of extra space at the bottom, almost kind of like a Polaroid. And as I was at the same time rebuilding my home darkroom with my little mobile darkroom cart that I just put together, the idea began to solidify itself of, well, you know, for the times of kind of slower, more methodical work that I want to do eventually with a Mamiya RB67, where I want a not perfectly flat level, you know, focal plane in order to you know, especially on the landscape side, benefit from some of the movements there. And when I want to do portraits on the street, with the ability to make, you know, large enough contact prints where you can actually hold them in your hand, a 4x5 press camera sounds like a great idea. And I'll try it, and if I end up not liking it, I'll pass it on. So that's actually where I kind of came into it. I was not particularly interested in a big, I mean, not that they're particularly big, but in a wooden, you know, folding type field camera, putting it on a tripod, focusing on the ground glass, because I had experience with that in college. And granted, I now know, having used some better ones, that the one that we had in college was terrible. The ground glass was all scratched up. The lens we had a maximum aperture of f/8, so it was dark as hell. So I never thought that I was going to be going down this road. And now, like, I've already got another 4x5 camera that's coming in from Ethan Moses at Camera Dactyl. He's making me a new version of his Camera Dactyl OG little 4x5 point and shoot that has a back that it can incorporate a Graphmatic back. So typically, for those that aren't familiar, when you're shooting 4x5, you're using film holders rather than like a cassette or a back. And they're typically, you know, what are called double dark slides. It's a little holder that's got, you know, two cavities on either side that you slide in a sheet of film, and then you put in this big, you know, sheet of plastic dark slide in to keep the light off. So you load that into the back of your camera, you take the dark slide out, take the picture, and then put the dark slide back, flip it over onto the other side. With a Graphmatic back, it uses a series of these little film holders called septums, and the dark slide is actually kind of built into the thing, so you don't take it out completely. You pull it out, and when you push it back in, it pushes one of those little septums that's holding a piece of film up to the front, right on the focal plane, so that you have, you know, essentially a rapid loading 6-shot magazine without having to take the dark slide out and find a place to put it in your mouth or in between your legs. So the combination of the Bush Pressman 4x5 press camera and the Camera Dactyl OG point and shoot with that Graphmatic back is going to allow me to shoot on the street, you know, without needing to focus on the ground glass, either, you know, zone focusing or scale focusing with a little focus scale on the bed of the camera, or with the rangefinder or the sports finder, or the little 3D printed sports finder of the Camera Dactyl OG, do like completely handheld normal angle and wide angle street photography on 4x5. So that's the path that I'm going down, which is what I find so interesting, because, you know, what I've seen from you, Visser, has been mainly studio portraiture for now. And from Brian has been a lot of outdoor, like on location portrait stuff. So it's really interesting to see kind of different styles emerging from us. And it's making me appreciate how much that my own conception of large format being this old, you know, fuddy-duddy thing of like, I don't know, shooting waterfalls or stuff like that, you know, and that's no diss to wonderful folks like Wayne Setzer who produce beautiful work, but it's making me realize that, oh, I was equating a format with a certain type of photography in a way that was unfair.
I love it. It's interesting that you, like, you know, you want to do, basically, you don't want to go underneath the cloth. That's one of my favorite parts about shooting 4x5 is like going under the dark cloth, seeing it on the ground glass, focusing on the ground glass. Yeah, it's kind of like a little bit of a mind fuck in the fact that it's, you know, upside down and reversed or mirrored. But that's, again, like part of the charm. And it's, you know, everybody talks about it when you're shooting large format, it's slower, it's more meditative. And it's true. And you have to like think a lot more. And like, especially if you're shooting like with like, I don't know, like a Nikon F100, which is basically just a DSLR with that shoots film, you don't have to think really. You can set it on automatic and it's just going to take an amazing shot, but you really have to put in the work, you know, because there's so many steps. There's like Matt Mirage says, the dance, you know, to making a shot happen, and a level like some level of pre-visualization or whatever. So, you know, that's like, I thought about like rangefinders or whatever. You know, I'd love to get a Linhof someday, but I don't even think I would use a rangefinder. I wouldn't even get ones with, I would get like a Master Technica 2000 or 3000. Because I just feel like for me, I want to see that image on the ground glass. I want to see the, you know, the actual representation of what I'm taking. And, you know, if I want to use a rangefinder, I can use my Leica, or I can go get a 120, you know, rangefinder. But for me, like large format, it's like about going underneath that cloth and seeing the image like as the actual size of what you're going to take.
Right. Yeah, that's I'm in the same boat, Chris. Like it's, but I, that's the thing that's so neat is like, as long as like you approach, and this is like to everyone like listening, right? If you approach whatever it is that you are interested in getting into, whether it be a 35 millimeter point and shoot, whether it be 120, a TLR, or whether it be large format, like each of these sort of genres or styles of cameras, they have their own, you know, way of being, their own way of doing, and they kind of inspire you to photograph in a certain way. And it, the interesting thing is, like, look at us right here. Like, Andre is approaching it in a very different way than how Chris, maybe you or I would be approaching it. And even I think in your and I approach, it's slightly different. So it's just interesting that like the same camera can inspire you to shoot differently. For me, I'm Chris like you in the sense that like, that's actually why I got out of the Pressman, because I have this weird thing where if a camera has something I'm not going to use, I don't want the camera. That's why I ended up with the Rolleiflex 2.8C, because I didn't want a Rolleiflex with a meter in it that I wasn't going to use. And so for me, I love the Shenhao because it doesn't have the rangefinder. I want to be under that dark cloth. I want to go through the dance. I love that process of like looking at the image upside down and reverse and like trying to do portraits with that, which is like, yeah, like it's a total mind fuck, but like it definitely helps you see differently. You know what's actually interesting about that, as a side note, I've been I'm like an accredited image competition judge, so I've like judged image competitions and accreditations for years, and one of the things that I've always taught and known is that when you can look at an image upside down, it's actually an exercise when you're looking at improving your photography. Look at your images upside down, because you see it compositionally very differently than if you were to see it right side up. So it's an exercise that if you're looking to curate your portfolio or, you know, figure out how you can improve your compositions and all that, like take an image and flip it upside down and you can see it differently. And with large format, I mean, that's literally how you make the image. So it's interesting because it forces your mind. It breaks your pattern. It's a pattern interrupt, right? Because we're used to seeing the image in front of us right side up and the proper orientation. But now shooting large format, it stops that. So it's almost in a way forcing your mind to work harder to figure out what the hell you're doing. And so it is a slowdown, but it helps you see differently. So that's my approach on it.
And I think that it also like plays into the whole delay gratification that you get with film. You know,
yeah,
if you're shooting with an SLR, you're generally, you like, you know what the image is going to look like, you know, in terms of like what the depth of field is, et cetera, all that. Mm-hmm. And the composition is, you may not know how it's going to look with the certain stock or lighting conditions or whatever, but you know, pretty much know what the image is going to look like. Rangefinders obviously are different, but like with this, it's like you see it, but also you don't. So mm-hmm. It's like you really won't know for sure until you get that negative or the positive. So there's a nice level of like delay, you know, the same delayed gratification. It just feels like even more intense because like you kind of see it, but you also don't at the same time. But I agree, like seeing it upside down, you really pay attention to the composition because you're like, all right, does this look right. Because I feel like, you know, getting used to like a waste level finder and having it, the orientation mirrored, that actually didn't take me terribly long when I, you know, I started with like a Sheikah Mat, you know, 124G. That was like my first waist level viewfinder camera. And I got used to it pretty quickly to the point where, like, you know, now with my HASI, if I ever put on my, like my 45 degree, you know, view, angle prism finder, I'm messed up. So like my brain already knows, like, if I'm using the HASI, things are reversed. I don't even have to think about it. So like when I put on the prism finder, I'm like backwards again.
Yeah, for sure.
But this is a whole other level with upside down, because it's just everything's reversed for you. But it again, because you're slowed down, you can pay attention. I think as long as like you either have a motionless subject or you have a patient subject, you have the time to be able to figure that out.
One of the things that I thought was so interesting about the press cameras, and which is why, like, and this will probably be something that we talk about in a little bit here. There's a question that I want to throw at both of you. But why I wanted to start off with the press camera is because you don't have to use it the way that a lot of press photographers used it. You can absolutely focus on the ground glass. A lot of them have a little kind of flip up hood that there's like usually like a metal cover and then a cloth you know, hood essentially that just extends out of the back of the ground glass that shades it a little bit, and you can use that. You know, you'll be hard pressed to put a loop in there. You might have to take that like unscrew that hood off completely to expose the entire ground glass to then put a dark cloth over it. But you've got options. And one of the things that I really like about the press camera is the myriad of options of viewing your subject, from the you know, parallax correctable like wire sports finder, to the, you know, combined rangefinder viewfinder, to the little focusing hood that you can just kind of focus by eye on the ground glass, to taking that off completely and throwing on the dark cloth. So the Busch Pressman can't do everything. Like, it only has a certain number of front standard movements, so it's not going to be able to do some of the crazy wacky things that Brian is doing, but it provides enough versatility to check a lot of my boxes and allow me to do a bunch of different kinds of photography that I previously, you know, couldn't do. And that's only the beginning. One of the things that I'm super excited about with large format is just that there's so much of like a rabbit hole to go down gear-wise, and not just gear-wise for the sake of gear, but actually to allow you to take different kinds of photos. Once you've gotten into something like even one of the modular, you know, system level cameras like the Mamiya RB, RZs, or the Hasselblads, you know, yeah, you can buy more lenses for it, you can buy more backs, different, you know, viewing options between, you know, the standard chimney waist level finders or prism finders, but that pales in comparison to how, you know, different you can get in terms of large format. Like right now I'm thinking about the Chroma cameras, which are either acrylic or carbon fiber, and the fact that you can adapt different backs on it, like panoramic roll film backs. They just you know, delivered a Kickstarter with it's a collaboration between Chroma and the J Lane dry plate company.
The dry plate holder, right?
Exactly, a custom dry plate holder.
Yeah, and I figured that out after they had their campaign, because that, like, I definitely want to get into tintypes. And that's been something I wanted to do for a long time, and I'm not going to do it. I don't know when I'm going to actually get into, like, you know, collodion, like wet plate stuff. Mm-hmm. But the J Lane dry plates have been really attractive because, you know, I don't have to, they come ready basically.
Yep.
And, you know, I have the Stearman Press 445 their 4x5 tank, and they make a special, reel for their tank for the dry plate, for the J Lane dry plate.
Oh,
okay. So that's something that I'm going to hopefully be exploring at some point during this year. Because Frank Thorpe did some really cool stuff with dry plate recently, especially like with his like newborn child, which was really cool. Like some self portraits with his holding his newborn baby, like, but also having like a mask on because of COVID time. Cause like, I think his child was born after quarantine started. But that feels like to me a way to start to explore like, you know, this different, like, it's not all tintype because, you know, tintype is just the aluminum or whatever, but these like different plate photography, and that's maybe the gateway drug, so to speak, because I don't have to coat the plate myself.
Yeah, no, and I will say coating the plate is not too difficult. I did it with my buddy Jason Madsen.
You had to buy those chemicals.
and you gotta, you know, make some kind of box with red filters so that you can see into it and everything. But no, absolutely, it lends you so much flexibility in terms of, you know, different backs and different styles of shooting. The actual medium on which you photograph is so much more flexible once you jump into large format than with medium format and 35. Like, you can shoot paper negatives, you can shoot positive paper, dry plates, wet plate.
It's there's 4x5 pinhole cameras or lenses.
And you know, it goes back to that thing that I was saying before, because you're only exposing one, you know, frame at a time, it allows you, you're not having to get through a quote unquote roll of 36 dry plates. If you want to experiment with certain lighting conditions and certain developers and stuff with one plate, you can do that test and be like, oh, okay, well, that didn't give me the contrast that I wanted. I'm going to expose another plate and increase my developing time by X. You can't do that level of experimentation and testing with other formats. You're not going to shoot one frame of 35 millimeter and develop that in a tank. But you can absolutely do that with 4x5. You can even tray develop it if you don't want to you know, use that much chemistry. So the amount of options and flexibility is something that's really attractive to me these days. And I can already see myself, you know, owning at some point, probably three different cameras. The Cameradactyl OG little, you know, 4x5 point and shoot with a wide angle lens. My Bush Pressman that can do a little bit of everything. It can be handheld. It can be put on a tripod and focus on the ground glass with a limited range of movements. And then a field camera of some sort, very likely, you know, something like a Chroma, just because it gives you a lot more flexibility than something like a Shenhao or Chamonix. And yeah, just to be able to do basically any type of photography that I want with that three camera arsenal.
You've come so far since 2018.
We all have in many, many ways.
All right, folks, we're back for the final segment, and a huge thanks to Mr. Andre Dominguez for that part one of his interview with Chris Visser and Brian Caparici, and I will get the part two out in the next solo episode. So, huge thanks to all those guys for joining us for this really, really cool interview about their getting all gassy and nerdy about their new journey into large format photography. A couple of last things I want to get out in this final segment. It is the Ghost Challenge photos. We have the negative positives Ghost Challenge photos, where you can fake take some ghost photos through multiple exposures, or hey, maybe if you might actually have a real ghost photo, whatever. We have this challenge going out. It's supposed to end on November 1st, the day after Halloween. I'm sure if you get something up in the day or two after that, I'm not gonna like disqualify it, because I'm just not on top of my game quite that much. But yeah, we're running out of time on that. And the way to submit photos, we're allowing everybody to submit two ghost photos, two creepy photos. And it's on the Facebook group, the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group. If you go to that group, at the very top of the page is like announcements. And the one you'll see probably the most predominant is the Ghost Challenge photo. And we have a ton of good submissions on that. So if you have any creepy photos, any fake ghost photos or real ghost photos, I'd love to see some real ghost photos, right? Then you can post your two submissions to that. On that thread, basically, at the at the top of the Negative Positives Facebook group, and put that in that thread in the announcements for the Ghost Photo Challenge. And we have like five. There's gonna be like five winners on this this challenge, with some really cool prizes. That was just awesomely given to us by Mr. Mike Padua from Shoot Film Co. And you're going to get some cool, you're going to get some cool stuff, some real cool stuff. So if you have anything creepy out there, you might want to try to get those in the next couple of days. And and I think one thing I've been thinking about as far as like the judging of this challenge is what I would like to ask all the members of the Facebook group to do is go through that thread and make sure you put a like in for your top five that you think are the best five. Because we're probably going to use likes a little bit, and I know I'm trying not to make this a popularity contest, but there's a lot of submissions. Thankfully, this time we have a lot of submissions, so likes can help weigh our vote for the top five winners. So if you're on the Facebook group, and you should be, because I mean it's the only reason to be on Facebook, but it's a good reason to be on Facebook. Go through that in the announcements. Go through the Ghost Challenge and like just try to like your top five, and because we're gonna take. That is a little bit of help in like judging the top five winners of that challenge. So yes, the Negative Positives Ghost Photo Challenge is coming to an end pretty rapidly. So get your submissions in if you haven't already. And hey, if you happen to be on the Facebook group, and you should be, go through that thread and put a like on about your top five. I'd like to see what people think are the best ones. Kind of help us judge this and pick the proper winners, the proper top five winners for this challenge, with some really good swag from Mike Padua from Shoot Film Co. And I think even Roxana has a really cool roll of film and stuff to throw in there. There's gonna be some cool prizes coming on this one. So, that's just a little announcement about that. Okay, again, so we need to start wrapping the show up. So, we got to get to the coffee donations. Got a couple this for this episode. First comes from Mr. Malcolm Myers, and he says, "Thanks for the podcast. Still enjoying it. So here's a little something for the three of you." Well, thank you, Malcolm. And Malcolm just recently sent me some call-in camera reviews. You'll be hearing from him in the near future. Huge thanks to Malcolm. And then we had another coffee donation from Mr. Bill Too. And we all love Bill. We all know Bill. Bill's awesome. Thank you so much, Bill. And the last thing is listener music, right? I got a couple of new tracks. I finally got somebody that hasn't sent me some original music to play on this show, and it comes from none other than Mr. Alex Purcell from the Soot and Whitewash podcast. And Alex and I have talked quite a bit recently. In fact, I have a solo show interview coming up with him in a couple weeks, probably to be the next one after I do part two of Andre's interview with Brian Caparici and Chris Visser. The next one after that will be Mr. Alex Purcell from the Soot and Whitewash podcast. We had a great conversation. That's also a pretty long conversation, so I might have to break that in two parts too. We'll see. We'll see what all I've got going on that week. But Alex also has some original music, and a lot of it he said was kind of goofing off, I guess. And which he did some electronic music, much like I did with a phone app. And much like I did, most of my electronic music. And so we're going to hear a little bit of, he actually went into the same way I did. It's like, I'm going to make some electronic music with this phone app, and then I'm going to play guitar over it. And then I think a little bit like I did, Never got around to putting the guitar over it or whatever. I do have one track from him where he did that, but that won't be this week. But yeah, so it was kind of funny. We both have made some electronic music on iPhone apps or whatever. So pretty cool. And but the track we're going to hear from Alex Purcell is called Untitled 6. And I believe he has, where did I get this from? I think it's a Bandcamp page. Is that right, Alex? I can't quite remember. I think it was Bandcamp. And it's going to be called Untitled 6 from Mr. Alex Purcell from the Soot and Whitewash podcast. And you will hear that after I get out all the social media information here to wrap the show up. So, okay, folks, thanks for listening. Again, you'll hear part 2 of Andre's interview on the next solo show 2 weeks from now. And I actually don't even have my guests lined up for the next full show next week. I'll get somebody lined up. I got some cool ideas, so look forward to that. Okay, hey, everybody have a great week. You can check out my photography on Instagram at GuttermanPhoto, on Facebook at Mike Gutterman Photography. You can email this program at negpositives@gmail.com. That's also where you'll send any sort of call-ins of anything you want to talk about in your film photography journey. You can join the Facebook group, the Negative Positives Film Photo Podcast Facebook group. We also have an Instagram account under the account name Negative Positives. If you submit photos to Instagram, think about using the hashtag Negative Positives, and maybe we will highlight it. And for all of y'all to check out, Roxana has been doing a great job with the Instagram feed, and she's going to start highlighting photos that you guys submit with that hashtag Negative Positives. If you want to support this program, it is on Ko-fi. It is www.ko-fi. Hold on, it's www.ko-fi.com/negative positives. We also have a merch site that we're making pennies on each sell, but it's still cool. It's just good to know there's Negative Positive swag. If you want t-shirts, hats, or a coffee mug, you can find that at negativepositivespodcast.bigcartel.com. All those links are, I'll try to put them in the notes. You know, I might get lazy. Who knows? All right. So I'm going to get out of here. Check out this track from Alex Purcell called Untitled 6. And until we talk to you again, everybody stay positive and shoot some cool film photos. We'll be right back. A Gutter Man Cave Production.